from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. This morning in San Jose, the City Council will take up the latest chapter in the ongoing debate over public employee retirement benefits. Mayor Chuck Reed wants the council to declare a fiscal emergency, which would pave the way for voters to decide if they want to make big changes in the pension and health benefits city employees receive. In this hour of forum, we'll hear both sides of the debate. We'll hear from Mayor Reed, members of the City Council, and a union leader. San Jose and the battle over public employee benefits. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson, sitting in this morning for Michael Krasny. The San Jose City Council is meeting at this hour to take up Mayor Chuck Reed's recommendation that the city declare a fiscal emergency. For the 10th straight year, the city of San Jose faces a sizable budget deficit, and the mayor has focused particular attention on one looming shortfall. According to the city, its retirement system is underfunded by nearly $3 billion in combined retirement and health care benefit costs. So Mayor Reed wants the council to declare a state of emergency. Such a declaration would help pave the way for big changes in the retirement benefits of current employees, not just those who are hired in the future. Those changes would still have to be ratified by city voters, and they face stiff opposition from various public employee unions. This morning, we will hear from all sides of this debate, starting with Mayor Chuck Reed, who I talked with earlier this morning. I began by asking him what the consequence would be if the city does not address the pension problem.
Unfortunately, there are really dire consequences if we don't take action now, because we are facing a continued reduction in our employment, and we will continue to reduce our employment levels for the city until we are unable to provide basic services to our people. This year, we have about 4,200 general funded employees. Those are the people that provide services like libraries, community centers, police, and fire. Next year, it'll be 3,600. The year after that, probably 3,000. And if this continues for another 4 or 5 years, as is projected by our professional actuaries, we'll be down to about 1,600 full-time general funded employees. Well, that's less than the number of people we have today in our police and fire department alone. It will be impossible to manage a city of 1 million people with 1,600 full-time general funded employees. That's something that we can't allow to happen. It would dramatically impact the quality of life for our people and certainly put their safety at risk.
And why is the public pension part of this equation such a key part in your estimation? Why do you have to solve that problem in order to contradict the numbers that you were just describing?
The pensions and retirement benefits for our employees are what are driving the costs. 10 years ago, we put $63 million into retirement benefits. This year, it's $150 million. Next year, starting in July, it's going to be $250 million. The year after that, $300 million. The year after that, $350 million. They're going up, up, up. And the professional actuaries hired by our retirement boards or independent are projecting they're going to go up for the next 15 or 20 years. And they're just dramatically growing, and we can't keep up with it. So what we have to do is to cut our workforce. Either we cut the workforce in half, which is unacceptable, or we do some reforms. And I'm asking the council to declare a fiscal emergency so we can take the actions necessary to protect the people of the city of San Jose from these drastic service reductions and to preserve the benefits that our retirees and our employees have earned and accrued so that we don't have to do something drastic in the future in order to protect the people of San Jose.
One of the most controversial parts of this, obviously, is the question of changing the public employee retirement benefits for current employees. It's normally in this kind of debate you focus on changing the rules for future hirees, but you want to go farther than that, and that's part of what makes this so controversial. Why do you think that it's necessary to change the rules for people who are already employed by the city?
We can't solve the problem. We cannot avert a disaster. We're not going to save our city unless we can deal with the current employees and current retirees. We, of course, will make some changes for future employees, but that's only a 10% solution. it will not solve the major problem. It will not slow down the ever-accelerating growth in retirement costs for our current employees and current retirees. We have to look at the existing employees. We have to make changes there. And we can make modest changes now. If we just make a few modest changes to reduce the expectations of future increases, we can avoid draconian changes in the future.
And what about those who might argue that you're just playing real tough hardball at this point and that this is just kind of a negotiating ploy, that you're carrying a big stick when a big stick isn't really necessary?
Well, they haven't looked at the numbers. Anybody who thinks that has not looked at the what their outside actuaries tell us. These are actuaries who have been retained by our retirement boards. We have two retirement boards. They're independent. They hire their own actuaries. Their actuaries, as well as the actuaries and the forensic accountants hired by our police officer association, have looked at the numbers, vetted the numbers, and I'm working with numbers that are given to me by independent people. And if you look at those numbers, you can see this disaster is headed our way. We need to do something now. You've got to sound the alarm before the tsunami hits. Otherwise, you're just going to be picking up from the destruction. I don't want to do that. We can't go there. We have to take action now.
And what flexibility do you feel like you have, Mr. Mayor, in terms of negotiating this out? Some of the unions, not all, but some of the unions in San Jose have expressed a willingness to work on this, have acknowledged that there is a problem. Are you set in the proposal that you're putting forward, or is there still room in your mind to come up with a negotiated settlement?
I'm committed to solving the problem. Exactly how we do that is up for negotiation, and I'm hoping that once we take this action, that all of our unions will be willing to get engaged. Unfortunately, many of our unions have refused to talk to us about retirement reform, including our largest union, AFSCME-MEF, that claims it's imaginary. So the police officers union went out and hired actuaries. They took a look at the numbers. They understand we have a problem. They've said they are willing to engage, and I look forward to that. Hopefully, we'll have a coalition of the willing, the unions that want to engage on this, that we can sit down with and try to work out a solution. But there must be a solution. That's what I'm committed to. Precisely how it's done, I think there's lots of different ways to do it, but action is required.
And, Mr. Mayor, if you don't get support today in the council for the state of emergency, what will you do then? Because you need that state of emergency declaration, right, in order to put together language that would change what the future benefits are and current benefits are for public employees. So if you don't get that today, where will you go next?
I certainly cannot stand by and watch the city slide into this disaster, which is not many, many years away. It's only a few years away. So I'm not going to stand here and let that happen. I will certainly start an effort to go to the voters through an initiative process, if necessary, to allow the voters, the taxpayers of the city, to just make the decision about what kind of a city they want. We can't just be passive about this. If we hope that it goes away, we do nothing, it will be a disaster. And I can't let the people of San Jose take that risk or take that hit.
That was San Jose Mayor Chuck Reed. We talked with him earlier this morning. We're going to pick up our debate now with City Council Member Ash Kalra, who represents District 2 in the City of San Jose Council. He is stepping out of the meeting that is now starting in San Jose on this very issue to talk with us briefly. Councilman Ash Kalra, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Give us your view on what you've just been hearing from Mayor Chuck Reed. You're opposed to the proposal that he has put forward. You heard him outline what he says are the dire consequences the city faces if it doesn't contend with this problem in the way he's suggesting. Why do you think it's not necessary to go as far as Mayor Reed wants to go?
Well, I don't think there's a need to go as far. I certainly don't deny there's a problem. I think everyone on the council has agreed and continues to agree that there is a problem. However, the way that the mayor and some of his allies are going about this is contrary to collective bargaining. It states a fiscal emergency based on retirement issues that really are going to play out over many, many years. And frankly, they're using numbers that we've known about for many months. And so I think that this is more of a political strategy to try to drastically change benefits that are given to current employees. And that's my concern, is the great legal risk we're putting ourselves at by altering benefits to contracted employees. And I think that we're going down a path that is certainly uncharted, and that case law has indicated is not permissible.
Is your concern that if you say that this is in the end going to be a legal question, that this sets up, even if you concurred with the mayor's view on this, that it just sort of handcuffs the city, that you're going to wind up spending all your time in court rather than solving the problem?
Well, that's one part of the problem. And the other aspect of it is, I think that we're going to be better off solving these problems, like many other cities, like Los Angeles and San Francisco and others are doing, by sitting together with the bargaining units, by getting the input from our neighbors and our residents, and solving it together by addressing the retirement issues in a way that we know is legal, that they come forward, they give up some of their benefits, they alter some of their benefits, but they do it in such a manner that prevents any of the legal risk. Because right now, by just going forward and drastically impacting the way that we do business with our employees, we're putting ourselves in a position where we don't know if the money that we're going to be saving will be there. Because if a court rules against us, then we have to go back and give back pay.
Yeah.
You know, one of the measures in there is that it wouldn't even allow us to give raises to our employees. And, you know, what kind of business does that? That you have to go to voters to give a raise to your employees over many, many years? It doesn't make sense. It's not a way you run a business. It's not a way you run a city. We have to be leaders and be very clear to our residents, which I've tried to do all along, that we do have a very serious problem.
But what
about the way? Yeah.
Sorry, Councilman. What about the mayor's argument that the only way you can really get your arms around this problem is to tackle this highly controversial and tricky issue of current employees? If you just focus on changing things for future employees, you're not going to get at the numbers that you need to get at.
I agree with the mayor on that. However, there are different ways to go about it. If you force it on the current employees, that's where the legal risk is opened. If you work with them, that's where you can get some real savings on active employees, on current employees. And the bargaining units have been willing to come to the table. In fact, these numbers have been around for a few months, and for 2 or 3 months, a number of the bargaining units have been waiting for the city to ask them to come to the table to start talking about these issues. Instead, this bombshell has dropped, and so now they're wondering, you know, how they can trust the city when they've been all along waiting to start talking about these really pressing issues.
City Council Member Ash Kalra, who has stepped out of the meeting going on right now in San Jose to give us his point of view on this. Councilman Kalra, thanks very much for giving us your point of view on this subject. We're going to hear, by the way, from the union, one of the union perspectives. Robert Sapien will be joining us in a moment. He's president of the San Jose Firefighters. We're going to hear his point of view. But next, we're going to sort of pass the phone to another member of the City Council who is also stepping out to give us his point of view on this. This is a City Council Member Sam Licardo. He represents District 3. He's chair of the Transportation and Environment Committee on the City Council. Councilman Licardo, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dave. Pleasure to be here.
You just heard Councilman Kalra in part make the point that part of his concern here is that if you go the distance in the way that Mayor Reed has proposed, that the city of San Jose is going to wind up in court and is going to wind up sort of being handcuffed by extensive legal proceedings, and that it's really not worth it, that you're going to trap yourself in a way. How do you respond to that particular part of this concern?
Well, I think it's important to recognize a couple facts. One is that Mayor Reed's proposal was very explicit that this proposal is not the only solution, and we're very open to other ideas. This is merely a proposal, and there won't be a final vote by the council to put anything on the ballot until August. But one thing is certain, which is that we have to go to the voters in order to change some key details around how retirement benefits are calculated, particularly retirement age. And so no matter what we negotiate with bargaining units or unions, we have to go to the voters to change the charter. So one way or another, we need to go this year, and time is running out to do it.
One of the things that has been controversial about Mayor Reed's proposal, well, there are many aspects to this, but let's walk through a couple of the specific things that he's put on the table. Changing retirement age for most employees from bumping it up to the age of 65, saying you have to work for 20 years before you can qualify for health benefits as a retiree, and limiting the way in which your retirement benefits accrue to 1.5% per year. You mentioned a moment ago that you think there's negotiating room within the proposal that the mayor has put forward. What about which of those, for example, would you be willing to give on?
Well, what we recognize is we've got to get to a number in order to reach a certain level of savings so we can actually stop the bleeding here at the city. We're laying off 370 employees. We're slashing services in really the most critical areas, closing libraries 4 days a week, laying off well over 100 police officers, and the thinnest staffed police department in the country. And so, right now, the focus has got to be how we can stop the bleeding. And any of those particular elements can be adjusted in various ways. You can move various dials in order to get to the savings number. So I don't think anybody is fixed on any particular number or any of those specific elements. But certainly, if you move the retirement age one way or another, you've got to move another dial. And that means all of these conversations are difficult, and ultimately, if we're going to get the savings we need to avoid what I think we all agree is fiscal disaster, it's going to require some very specific cuts that, frankly, no employee would want, knowing that they've been promised these benefits for years, and quite justifiably, they're upset about the fact that these benefits are being cut.
And how do you respond to Councilman Kalra's point that this is best solved at the bargaining table, that you want to avoid a situation where voters are voting on specific aspects of employee compensation and employee benefits, that there's a long tradition to solving these things across the table? Why isn't that the right way to go in your judgment?
Well, we've actually been negotiating for quite some time around compensation cuts of various kinds. And some bargaining units are quite willing to come forward, and others have not been. But the reality is that we have 11 bargaining units, and we need to have some citywide approach to how it is we're going to try to get these retirement costs under control. And negotiating unit by unit isn't going to get us there.
Yeah.
We are very open to continuing conversations and negotiation. But then the notion that somehow or another we can constrain retirement benefits through a charter or having to go to the voters and that somehow undermines collective bargaining simply isn't true. The city of San Francisco, City and County of San Francisco, for instance, requires going to a vote to increase or change retirement benefits.
Last quick question, Councilman Liccardo. You've written in the past that you think it's important that this not be defined as a liberal versus conservative issue, Democrat versus Republican. We've seen how bitterly this issue can play out in the state of Wisconsin, for example, where it was very much divided along party lines, Democrat, Republican. You're a Democrat. Give me your sense of that issue and why you think it's important from a Democrat's point of view to approach it in the way you want to approach it.
Well, David, I was one of four Democrats who signed the mayor's memo. And, you know, as I see it, I represent many neighborhoods in which my residents, I represent many low-income neighborhoods, and my residents work two jobs to make half as much as some of our public safety employees make on average when they retire in their early 50s. On average, they earn about $103,000 per year in pension, plus, of course, free health insurance. And so the notion that somehow or another it's a progressive or Democratic position to defend retirement benefits that we all know are unsustainable and that are resulting in really severe cuts that are harming the most fragile neighborhoods, the most dependent of residents, you know, youth who need after-school mentoring, community centers and gang prevention programs, seniors that are looking at nutrition programs getting cut. These are really critical services that we are slashing because we're feeding this monster of retirement benefits. Mm. And it's hurting employees as we lay off hundreds of employees, and it's obviously hurting the residents.
Councilman Sam Liccardo, member of the San Jose City Council, will let you get back to your meeting as you work your way through this important and controversial issue. Councilman Liccardo, thank you.
Thank you, David.
We're joined now by Robert Sapien. He is president of the San Jose Firefighters, Local 230. Mr. Sapien, thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to start with what you just heard Councilman Liccardo say. He made an argument for the fact that there are a lot of things at stake here, including the very services that a city provides, whether that's social services, keeping libraries open, or the services you represent as a firefighter, services the police represent. And that we can't, in his judgment, look at that as something that is less important than maintaining pension benefits for public employees. How do you respond to that particular argument?
I think the concerns are very real. Clearly, the rising costs of retirement benefits are cutting into our ability to provide services across the board, and that's a real problem. Where I differ with Councilman Liccardo and certainly with the words that the mayor put forth is the method on how we go about resolving these issues. My union, for example, 6 months ago put forth real proposals for pension reform. And just like last year, the city has refused to proceed with negotiations driving towards ballot initiatives. 1 year ago, they declared impasse on several contracts before budget time so that they could usher through imposed contracts on labor unions. This year, they've stalled negotiations on retirement reform, which was actually promised to my bargaining unit as part of our 10% concession that we gave to the city, and have stalled through. And now we know why. It was so that they can proceed with another ballot initiative that it clearly is not a solution to the problem, but an attack on labor unions.
One of the difficulties here, as you heard Councilman Liccardo articulate, is that there's so many different bargaining units, as is true across the city, and that there have been some firefighters and police in particular who've already made significant givebacks. You've given back, what, 10% of your salaries?
That's correct.
Is that correct on the firefighter side? Police have also said they'd cut back 10% on at least a temporary basis. But there have been other, at least as I understand it, public employee unions in San Jose that have been less willing to go there. And we should note at this point, by the way, that we did invite Yolanda Cruz, who is president of AFSCME, the largest public employee union in San Jose, to participate in our program, and she was unable to do so. But that's tricky, is it not? I mean, if you can't get everyone to the table, and particularly if you are struggling with how you're working with the largest of the unions in the city of San Jose, the rationale that the other side is putting forward is, well, that's why we've got to go that way, because we can't do this bit by bit, union by union.
Well, to say that we can't simply is walking away from what we've done for as long as we've been a city. We hire a variety of employees in the city of San Jose, police officers, firefighters, librarians, et cetera, all under different contracts. That is how the city has operated for many, many years. That is the city's obligation. Each of those contracts represents an obligation by both the employee and the city. And to simply declare a state of emergency and decide that we're going to walk away from how we've done business really isn't meeting your obligations as an employer.
But what would you do then if for example, again, with AFSCME, the President Yolanda Cruz has suggested that in her view, in an op-ed she wrote for the San Jose Mercury, that the problem is imaginary. If that's the attitude as represented by the largest of the city unions, how do you contend with that?
Difficult as all negotiations are. I know Yolanda Cruz personally. I know she has the best interests of her members in mind, and I know she's publicly acknowledged that pension costs are rising and that reform is necessary. So she may have moved off of her position, and frankly, it's been difficult for her to work with the city on her contract.
And we'll pick up with that thought and more when we continue. We'd like to hear from you on this difficult and controversial issue. 866-733-6786 is our number. 866-733-6786. Join us if you'd like to weigh in on this issue. We'll be back in just a moment with more. This is Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson, sitting in for Michael Krasny today. Our topic this hour, City of San Jose. The mayor, Chuck Reed, wants to have the city council endorse a state of fiscal emergency, something that would pave the way for possible big changes in the way the city deals with its public employees and their retirement benefits. The city council is meeting at this hour to debate that. Earlier, we heard from two city council members and Mayor Chuck Reed. We're joined now by Robert Sapien, who is president of Local 230 of the San Jose Firefighters. We're also going to hear in a moment from a citizens group that is concerned about these issues as well. Mr. Sapien, before we start taking our listener calls also, and by the way, here again is the number, 866-733-6786. Before we take calls and hear other points of view, let's focus a little bit more, if we can, on perhaps what is the most controversial aspect of this, which we heard our previous guest describe, and that's changing the rules for current employees. I think everyone can get their arms around the idea of changing something for future hirees. But for people who are already on the job and have been working a certain number of years, there is this sense from your side that it's sort of changing the rules after the game has already begun. Mayor's argument is you can't solve this problem unless you attack this for current employees. What's your feeling about that? Can you see a way that you can change things for current employees and not buck some of the legal challenges that are sure to come?
I think the mayor's accurate. The real cost savings that come right now would be changes to benefits that are already being paid out or vested benefits. That's just plain the truth about how benefits are paid out and where the costs are today. The difference that I would have with the mayor is that I believe that we can sit at a negotiating table and come to an agreement and work with those that have already vested in the system to see if we can come up with some solutions. I do believe that that's possible.
Would your argument then be, Mr. Sapien, let's let the process work. Let's fold this out over some time. But would you also agree that if it doesn't work by a certain point, and I'm making this up, but let's say if you're not any further by, you know, midsummer or whatever, that you'd agree that it would have to take a different path, that there would be a need to take this to the voters?
Well, I think what I would say is we can't let go of the urgency. There definitely is an urgency to coming up with reforms that can save money, that can keep services going in the city of San Jose. That's true. What I don't want to see, however, is the mayor's plan go through, because what we're going to have then is a legal challenge to many of the items that are listed in here and a prolonged effort to come up with answers to the legal questions that may result in having us right back to where we started and maybe at higher cost.
Robert Sapien, again, he's the president of Local 230, the San Jose Firefighters. We're joined now also by Marcia Fritz. She is the president of the California Foundation for Fiscal Responsibility, which is an organization working on pension reform in various locales around the state. Marcia Fritz, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
On this particular point that you just heard Robert Sapien outline, and also part of the concern that San Jose Councilman Ash Kalra outlined earlier, which is do it at the bargaining table. That's the tradition in how American labor has worked. And to circumvent that by taking it on the ballot is not really the way you want to go. You don't want to have voters voting on benefits, voting on raises, voting on all of this sort of thing. How do you respond to that fundamental question?
Well, I don't think retirement benefits should ever have been put on the negotiating table in the first place. If you go out of California, you don't see, for the most part, pensions being negotiated at all. They're passed by legislation with a lot of input from experts and a lot of dialogue and a lot of a lot of people weighing in. When you have these benefits in a closed session where managers stand to gain from exactly the same benefit that they're negotiating with labor, you've got elected officials taking contributions from labor to be in their spot to say yes. You've got pension officials who stand to gain when benefits are high because they get more money and they can make more money by managing more money. It's just like a mutual fund. The conflicts of interest are immense. It's a very complicated area, And it really shouldn't be on the bargaining table in the first place.
It sounds like you favor a sort of Wisconsin-style solution, which is to take all that off the bargaining table, only have what's bargained is salaries. Is that correct? Do you favor what happened in Wisconsin?
No, I don't. There's a lot of things I don't like about Wisconsin, but I do favor taking pension benefits to a large extent off the bargaining table. I think the people that are making these decisions in closed sessions are ill-equipped, frankly. We have a 350,000 public employees that do not collectively bargain their benefits, and that's the teachers. So if it works for the teachers, why can't we have the same with public sector?
Yeah, interesting point. Robert Sapien, you want to respond to that, please?
So the question is, why
collectively bargain retirement benefits? If teachers don't bargain their retirement benefits, why should firefighters and city employees?
I think it's a great question that doesn't answer the question before us. The question before us is, how do we resolve the rising costs of pension today? And what do we do about the city's obligation to its employees today? That really is the question. Simply to go to a ballot measure today to say we're going to walk away from employees, they're going to feel the pain of us moving forward, and we're not going to live up to our obligation, really is the question. So whether or not down the road pension benefits are or are not a matter of collective bargaining at the local level really is off point to what this is all about.
Robert Sapien, again, president of the Firefighters in San Jose. Marcia Frist, president of the California Foundation for Fiscal Responsibility. We'd like to hear from you. This is such a key question that so many cities and the state, of course, as a whole are now contending with. One of the big public policy questions really of our time, and we'd like to hear what you think. Let's hear first from Mark in San Jose. Mark, go ahead, please.
Thank you. I'm a city employee and also a city resident and taxpayer, of course. And I think there's a larger question here. All the focus on the discussion is about employee benefits and pay. And I think there's a larger question in terms of how the city has been managed and what the fiscal practices of the city council and the mayor have been. We have a $1 billion city hall that we have a monthly, or I believe it's a yearly debt service that's in the millions, and none of those dollars really go out directly into the neighborhoods to fund community centers or libraries. We have different opportunities where the city is not looking at how they're spending money. They have forgiven debt to a grocery chain that went under and actually didn't pay their employees. That was $500,000. They've forgiven debt to a local movie theater that was $800,000. All these things add up.
Yeah, Robert, I take your point, and it's one that one of our other listeners has emailed in about as well. So let's see if we can get some reaction to that. Hope in San Jose has also written in with that point. Mayor Reed has long professed a need and goal to attract more business to San Jose, but how would this affect whether or not businesses would choose to come here? What else can be done to change this situation? Helen writes in, while I understand our city has a budget shortfall, what is the city doing to curb other expenses on operating costs, consulate fees, and so forth? So there's a number of people who are saying, Robert Sapien, that there are other ways that we could solve the problem. The city ought to focus on things other than this. Do you agree with that? Because you've been pretty candid about acknowledging that this really is a problem.
I couldn't tell you right now that we have enough savings that are out there in other expenditures that could offset the retirement costs. I don't believe there are. The retirement costs are very large. I think that as we try to work through creating a thriving economy in San Jose, that you're going to see some unique expenditures along the way. I've worked in the city for 21 years, and I can point to times where I felt that spending was wasteful, and I can point at times where I thought some opportunities to expand business in San Jose were very successful. So really, I think addressing the pension problem is what we need to do.
Marcia Frist, I assume you agree that just cutting wasteful spending isn't going to get us there.
Yeah, the pensions are relentless. They march on no matter what. And I'm seeing that that lenders for mortgages are now considering the pension debt in the local agencies as a criteria of whether it's a good place to loan money. I mean, it's a value that that citizens have, if they go into a city and want to live there, they want that pension fund to be fully funded and affordable. And we don't, and you don't have that in San Jose right now. And it's reducing the value of real property, seriously, because you're going in and taking over a debt as a homeowner.
So your concern would be that unless this problem is solved, that there will be serious business ramifications and for the life and vitality of the city. Let's hear from another caller. George is calling in from San Jose from the Police Officers Association. George, go ahead, please.
Good morning, David, and your callers. Thank you much for taking my call. I'm the president of San Jose Police Officers Association here in San Jose. And first off, I'd just like to say that we have been on the record for over a year indicating to the city, the chamber, and the local editorial board, newspaper editorial board, that we do believe that pension reform needs to occur. But one of the issues we have is that the city has yet to really bargain in good faith over pension reform. And let me give you an example. On February 17, 2011, the mayor stated at the State of the City address, and this is a quote, "If we don't achieve reforms through negotiations, the voters will certainly make the changes at the ballot box." Well, we've been at the table with the city since January of 2011, and up until May 12th, when the mayor issued his latest memorandum on pension reform, we have yet to hear anything from the city about pension reform. And the thing that gives us heartache is, as Mr. Sapien has stated, we are willing to sit down and talk about pension reform because we believe it has to happen, but we don't believe we have a willing partner in the city that wants to actually do that with us. We think they really want to go to the ballot box and bypass the negotiation process.
And what about the rest of your union brethren in this issue? We were talking before, George, about one of the arguments that the mayor's side and also Councilman Liccardo make on this point is that the largest of the city unions, AFSCME, has been, I think it's fair to say, somewhat less willing to work on this front as your union has or the firefighter unions has. And again, we did invite the president of that union to join us and she was unable to do so. But how do you wrestle with that?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with acknowledging the reality of the fact that there is, in fact, problems with the pension. We learned just through hiring our own outside actuarial expert that has told us, hey, there really is
right.
Some validity to what the city is saying. And to take it further, to even move it one step further, at the Police Officers Association, we actually did town hall meetings here educating our membership on what the true facts are with regards to the pension crisis. So, I mean, I think Mr. Sapien stated earlier in the conversation, I think that many of the unions are moving from their position now and coming to what the reality is that they face.
George, thanks. Thanks for joining our conversation today. Appreciate it. Let's hear from some of our other callers this morning. Robert joins us next. Robert, go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. My comment is, why don't we tackle this problem at the beginning? We have pensions that now are too high. They should be limited to 50% of what the person was earning when he was working. If the rest of the public has to subsidize the lavish pension of a person who is now retired, the rest of us can't meet our obligations. Persons who are retiring have opportunities to save their money while they were working or in some other way to provide for their retirement. It doesn't have to come entirely from the taxpayers. So my comment is we need to limit the pension that we pay people to 50% of their salary.
Robert, thanks. Let's get some conversation going on that particular point. You hear this a lot, Robert Sapien, that the retiree pensions are too high. Your response?
Retiree pensions are largely market-driven. During high economic times, they rose up to the current levels, and we're seeing probably a need for market correction, and you'll probably see the maximum benefit of pensions go down through this time period as that occurs. With regard to...
So you would agree that sometimes public employees retire at pensions that are too close or sometimes equal to the amount they made in their working lives, and that's gotten out of hand?
I wouldn't say it's gotten out of hand. It's what the market drove, and that's where we're at. The statement that we can just decide tomorrow to go to 50% and that'll be the amount really avoids a lot of the difficulty that we're trying to get to in negotiations, which is how do you deal with someone who's been contributing their own money towards those benefits? In other words, the employee pays a portion or contributes to the plan to achieve those benefits as well. And so costs have gone up for them to achieve those benefits. Pulling it out from under them really is taking money out of their pocket. And so coming to answers for these problems really is a matter of a lot of dialogue at the negotiating table.
Marcia Fritz, weigh in on this as well. This is a tricky topic because people can talk about average salaries of retirees, and it really varies. Someone who retired 30 years ago is going to get a lot less than someone who retired yesterday. It depends on how many years you work, so forth and so on.
Yeah, we have a study on our website, www.fixpensionfirst.org, and it compares both compensation and benefits with the public sector to the private sector, and we look specifically at the San Francisco area. And generally speaking, the benefits, the value of benefits in the public sector are three times more valuable than the benefits provided by employers in the private sector. And the compensation is comparable. So the real delta, the real difference for public employees right now is their retirement benefits. I know that in our study, we looked at the average value of a CHP's retirement benefit when he or she retires at age 57.
That's a California Highway Patrolman?
Yeah, California Highway. And the reason I say that is a lot of these safety workers map their benefits to the Highway Patrol. But the average benefit for a patrol worker retiring today is $1.8 million. And that only includes what the employer has set aside. It doesn't include the value of what the employee...
That's the lifetime retirement benefit describing?
Yeah, $1.8 million. So that's clearly far in excess. It's way higher than what the FBI gets, for example. It's way up there. So we really have overdone it, and to expect these benefits to go forever because you promised a guy at age 25 and now that person's 35. You just can't set aside enough money to make that.
But here's the other side of the argument. Jackson writes in, please distinguish between what bureaucrats get and people who make $17.50 an hour. There are a number of fattening retirement pay practices available by those at the top of the public employee food chain. However, I'm an outreach worker making $17.50 per hour for the city of San Francisco. Please do not vilify the rank and file who make far less than those which the news media often cite. Again, Robert Sapien, I mean, that's the tricky part of this, that we tend to sort of point to the kind of horror story part of this, and that's worth pointing to. But there are also people like Jackson.
There are people like Jackson in all bargaining units within the city of San Jose who love to come to work, love to serve the citizens of San Jose, don't become millionaires doing what they do, but they do stick around a long time. And part of the reason they do is the motivation that part of their pay and part of the city's pay goes towards a pension.
Talk to me a little bit, if you would, Robert Sapien, about what you'd be willing to do personally. You're a guy who's served the city for 20 years as a firefighter, now the president of your local union. What would you be willing to give back? What would you, if you're on schedule right now, what are you on schedule to get as a retiree? Let's say you retire 5 years from now. What would that be?
I would not be eligible to retire in 5 years. In San Jose, for fire department employees and police officers, you have to be in the department for at least 25 years and be 50 years of age or 30 years before you can retire.
But if things were to continue on their current front without changes,
maximum benefit for me would be after 30 years of employment would be a 90% final average salary benefit.
Which is about what?
Which would be 140,000, I think, roughly.
Now, would you be willing to acknowledge that that sounds pretty darn good, 140,000 a year retirement benefits, and would you be willing to sort of carve that downward?
Well, the discussion is exactly the one we want to have with the city, the one we've found a closed door to, which is we do need to sit down. We do need to talk about these benefits. We do need to find answers to whether it's reducing final average salary, which is going to be a great driver to lowering costs, raising age requirements to reasonable levels for public safety workers.
And you're willing to have that conversation?
Absolutely. And we have an open invitation to the city to do that.
And I know this isn't really fair to sort of pinpoint Robert Sapien as case exhibit A on this, mm-hmm. so forgive me for that. But where would you be willing to go? I mean, from 140 down to what?
The mayor referred an awful lot to professional actuaries. And the other day in city council, as the council was hearing explanations of how this all works, is that there are a lot of dials and levers on a pension plan and lowering costs by adjusting one thing and not the other. And to be honest with you, I haven't quite gotten that far. I'd like to get that far.
And not really fair to negotiate your retirement benefits over live radio. So forgive me for going there. Yeah. But it's an interesting way to sort of get your arms around the specifics of this issue. Let's hear next from Jim in San Jose. Jim, go ahead.
Good morning. I am a retired San Jose firefighter.
Okay.
15 months ago. Hi, Robert. I'm your neighbor.
Hi, Jim. Good to see you.
So a history lesson. Even in good times, in negotiations, the city would start with zero. And the people who have, and I freely admit that we have ourselves a decent package. I cannot complain. And I feel sorry for the people who in this country who are truly suffering right now because of the economic meltdown. But perhaps if that energy were turned towards unionization, we would all be better off. Because as you see the lack of unions in this country dropping, so has the economy, along with it, and the standard of living.
But Jim, how would you sustain that if you and I? You don't have to tell us what you're getting now as a retiree, but it's pretty clear from all the numbers, and your union president has acknowledged this as well, that this is not sustainable in the long run. So while it's well and good to say that there ought to be a stronger union movement in this country, if it's not sustainable, what does that accomplish?
Well, no. I'm not disagreeing with Robert either. I fully support what he's saying in terms of let's sit at the table. And the city has a bad history here. That's why we wound up in binding arbitration so many times, because they refused to negotiate, to give and take. And part of the vilification that I feel we're getting is misplaced, because it's not like the unions stole these things. Somebody on the other side of the table signed on the dotted line eventually. So a previous council person and a mayor agreed to the stuff that we have today.
Yeah.
And a lot of the retirement stuff was based on the fact that we didn't get raises at a certain time.
Jim, thanks.
It was a trade-off.
Thanks for adding in your two cents. Marcia Fritz, let's bring you back and weigh in on this particular point, that these were negotiated in good faith. People signed on as members of city governments and city employees, based, in fact, on the promise of getting a good retirement. Respond to that part of this argument.
Well, I'm a national expert in pension benefits. I was a former consultant for CalPERS. I did not even know that pension benefits were increased in my own city until about 6 months after it happened. The city council are just simply not equipped when they have a manager who stands to gain personally, or a fire chief or a sheriff, you know, telling them that these benefits are affordable and reasonable. And when that city council is paid with campaign contributions to make that decision, and they have an actuary report by a pension system, it's just like selling insurance. The pension system wants as much money as it can get, and it will do everything it can in that report to get a yes. So, you know, and people like me, I'm continue to have to chase these decisions after the fact, and we have no control over it. So I disagree that they were negotiated fair and square. They should have been open discussion, open dialogue. It should have been front page news in the newspaper and on the radio that this was about to happen, and wake people up. And that wasn't done.
Marcia Fritz, again, she's president of the California Foundation for Fiscal Responsibility. We read a couple of emails earlier on people who were supportive of the importance of unions. A couple of people writing in on the other side of this equation. Rick writes in, I'm an average citizen and can retire with roughly $24,000 per year after I reach the age of 67. Why? Do unions think they can retire at 50 or 55 with 10 times that amount and complete with gold-plated medical benefits thrown in? And Jay writes, the unions are no longer protecting employees. They're impeding or slowing down change and not acting in the best residents who vastly outnumber the employees. Preserving jobs to serve the residents is vital. Yes, there is a state of emergency. Robert Sapien, your reaction to those last couple of comments. I'm going to Robert Sapien. We'll get your view in just a second, Marcia. So hang on.
Yeah. Again, these are market-driven benefits. And along the way, as employee groups have negotiated pensions, there have been decision points. And they've been decision points at the negotiating table where compensation decisions were perhaps, do you get something on the hourly wage side or a health benefit or another cost benefit or a pension benefit. And so the negotiations process was a matter of choices over time, again, largely market driven and driven by just time in negotiation. So in terms of how firefighters compare to firefighters, police officers compare to police officers, librarians to librarians, I'm sure you'll find commonality across the board. The caller or who wrote in that question, I don't know what industry they're in. That probably is the market for their industry. Again, if correction is in order in the market, it will happen.
Just have a few seconds left. But Marcia Fritz, just a very brief 10-second or so thought, if you can, please, on the significance of what San Jose is wrestling with today.
Oh, it's huge. It's significant, but the way the mayor is going is very groundbreaking. I'd be interested to see where he goes. It will be challenged legally, but I'm very interested in what's going to happen.
And Robert Sapien, your view on the importance of what the council tackles today?
It's critically important. What today decides is whether or not the city of San Jose holds up its obligation to its employees, comes to the negotiating table, and works collaboratively to solve problems, or whether they work to just walk away.
Robert Sapien, president of the San Jose Firefighters Local 230. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks to
Marcia Fritz, the city council members who joined us earlier, and Mayor Chuck Reed for participating in our program. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Tina Lorberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, in for Michael Krasny. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.